Good afternoon. Scott Spears along with you on this Tuesday, October the 30th, 2018. 18 minutes past the hour, you're tuned in to the Now program, and we have got a great show for you today. Want to do a little bit of housekeeping before we get into the program today and let you know what's coming up here in the next week on WWGH Radio. Now, we will have live election coverage next Tuesday, a week from today, starting at 7:10 p.m. Tuesday, November 6th, starting at 7:10 p.m., election coverage will start here on WWGH Radio. This coverage will not end until all the votes are counted, until we've elected the 70th governor of Ohio, until all the local races are counted and projected. We will not leave the coverage. Charlie Evers, Sean Kraft, and myself will be in studio. Linda Sims will be reporting live from the Board of Elections, and Terry Tackett will be at Democratic and Republican headquarters going back and forth to get the reaction on the big election day, 1 week from today, 7:10 p.m., we will start and we will be uninterrupted. And a few special calls that night you're not going to want to miss. Now, coming up next hour today, we're going to be joined by the mayor of the city of Marion, Scott Schertzer. So that'll be an interesting conversation, 7 days out from the election. And tomorrow, we will have the prosecutor of Marion, 12 to 2, Ray Grogan, who's in a race to try to remain prosecutor against Jeff Ratliff next Tuesday. So we'll talk with Ray tomorrow. We talked with Jeff last Thursday. Ray Grogan tomorrow, 12:10 to 2 p.m. Then on Thursday, we'll have Dr. Ronald Feynman, the progressive professor, who will give his predictions on the upcoming elections nationally, statewide, so on and so forth. And coming up today at 2:10, we had some technical difficulties here at the station yesterday, but the sheriff of Marion County, Sheriff Tim Bailey, was in yesterday. We had a discussion in regard to the upcoming election and things going on in Marion, and we will play that taped interview today after the mayor at 2:10 p.m., so you won't want to miss that. And you're not going to want to miss what's coming up this hour. We are joined by a first-time visitor to this program. He is an impressionist, a comedian, a performer, a voiceover actor, and we're so glad to have him with us today. He was scheduled yesterday, and he's so kindly coming back with us today because of our technical difficulties. So proud to welcome to these microphones for the first time, Johnny Counterfeit. Johnny, how are you?
I'm doing great, Scott. How's everything over there in Ohio?
Everything is great. Aside from the technical difficulties yesterday, we're good.
Great. Well, it's good to be here with you. I don't know who has the better weather today. Here in Nashville, it's about 65. I think we're about the same as you are up there. So the whole day is shaping up great.
Yeah, we're in the same neighborhood. Mid-60s here today, but I think by Thursday, we're going to be down in the 40s again.
Well, it's that global warming stuff.
Johnny, well, let's start here. Where did you come up with the name Johnny Counterfeit?
Well, when I first started sitting in with live bands around my hometown, doing the different characters, doing the counterfeit versions, if you will, of their voices, I thought, well, I better come up with a stage name here. So the short story of that is I decided, well, of course, the first one that I did, the first of many in a show, is Johnny Cash, of course. And I thought, well, what would a impression of Cash? What should I call myself? A counterfeit Cash. And I didn't want to be singled out as being a Johnny Cash look-alike, sound-alike, impersonator. So I always kept a bunch of voices involved with my different routines. But I did decide on Johnny Counterfeit because I obviously counterfeit voices. So I've never been in the printing business or anything like that, just voices.
When did you realize you had this talent to imitate performers?
Well, I was a kid of the 60s watching television, and I discovered that I could do the same voices that I was hearing off of television, and I just started having fun with it, entertaining my family, and then, of course, kids at school, and I just enjoyed it so much because I naturally love making people laugh anyway, and so it all kind of figured itself in altogether as a hobby until one day I decided to turn it into a career. But really, television got me started, and then later on, my parents purchased what was in those days referred to as a stereo, great big console, you know, about the size of a coffin, but big sound, and they got LPs, and of course, the records were country music largely, and so I just started listening to those voices I was hearing in the music, and I taught myself how to sing and then do those voices, and it just all came together as a fun thing at first.
Was there anything else you ever wanted to do when you were growing up?
Well, I think not as a career. I really didn't think about any kind of a career move. I had the during high school and just after high school, I had the usual jobs that many people have, you know, warehouses, and I'd load and unload trucks, and I had a stint in a concrete plant, and was just very happy with earning a living and doing that. And then one day the economy kind of took a slump there in Portland, Oregon, where I grew up. Born in Omaha, but I grew up in Portland, Oregon. The economy took a little bit of a dip, and I was working part-time somewhere at this particular point in history. But I had been sitting in with different bands around the local neighborhood or in and out of the city, having fun with it. And just one day I thought, well, maybe I can make a career out of this. And so I resolved to develop more voices, more routines, and hone my craft. And I just gave it a shot. Gosh, it's been almost 38 years ago. And listen, Scott, it's tough getting started at 3 years old, but I did. That's the short story.
When you first got up on stage, what was it like? Were there a lot of nerves? How long did it take you to get to a good place?
Well, actually, my stint in front of the camera, I didn't think much about it at first. I was probably 7 or 8 years old on one of the local cartoon shows, and I noticed the cameras and all that sort of thing. It was very interesting to me. But then later on in grade school, I was on stage performing. Actually, now that I think about it, the first time I was on stage acting, I was in the first grade with some other kids, and so I kind of got my feet wet there. Later on in seventh grade, I was in a talent contest, and then on into high school, I took drama, and my senior year was my first stint acting in front of a television camera. It was May 1st, and we had what was called Law Day, and some of us had rehearsed to put on a presentation, a live television presentation of a mock trial. And I played a character that was on trial for breaking and entering a place called the Happy Time Taco Company. So that's really how I got started. And it just felt kind of natural to me because up until this point in front of the television camera acting, I had entertained students during lunchtime and sometimes during class at the chagrin of some teachers, but never really got into trouble. So really it was just kind of a natural, this is what I've been doing anyway. So it just came to me, and it was, I don't know, kind of like swimming. I just dove in, and there I was. Now, more to the point, when I started performing my impressions with bands on a live basis, of course I had the stage fright because I had all these extra things going on, like having to keep time with the band and minding the voices. And so at first I had stage fright, but I resolved that the best way to get through that is just to keep getting up on stage. And so that's what I did. And in a short time, I got over all of that and just had fun with it.
What is the crowd's reaction when you go into these impressions?
Well, today it's a little bit different, though it's always positive. Before the internet, it was more of a novelty because the only way you could see impressionists, if you will, was either on television or live somewhere. And so it was quite a novelty. Today, with the internet, where you can see anything and hear anything and read anything you want on the internet, it's more of an acting situation where I'm recreating the characters that I'm doing, and so it's almost like doing a play, if you will, that I'm acting out the character, the body language, and to more of the degree of, oh yeah, that's pretty darn accurate. I saw that on the internet last night. So it's a little different, but to answer your question, the reaction is always the same. I try to make them laugh, and I'm very blessed that way. I do my ad-libbing and the jokes, and of course the voices. And it just all comes together for recreating these characters live on stage.
Obviously, these are real people, some with us, some no longer with us. What makes a good person to impression? Who is good and who would be bad?
Well, that's pretty much up to the impressionist you may be talking with at the time. For me, I try to look for interesting characters, and that's kind of far and few between these days, because there are really not a whole lot of interesting characters, say like a John Wayne or a Jimmy Stewart or Humphrey Bogart, you know. And of course, fewer and fewer people remember them, God forbid, but thanks to the internet they can still see them. So I'm kind of dancing in between who used to be and who's still on the internet. But more to your point, I try to find their cadence of talk, the tone that they use, and of course, if it's an actor, I'll do some scenes from one of their famous movies. I suppose the opposite side of that I try to stay away from are a lot of the actors today are just unrecognizable unless you see them, you know, on the screen, whether it's your computer or television or the movie screen. So they're not really distinct anymore. There are some, but depending on their characters. An example, Joe Pesci is an example. Unless he's doing a character, he's almost unrecognizable if you just start doing his voice in conversation. You have to hearken people's memories back to a particular scene that they've done in a movie, whereas, well, if you're doing John Wayne, all you gotta do is just start talking and breathing like that, and then the next thing you know, you know what I mean, Scott? It's just a different thing.
When we talk about people like John Wayne and Jimmy Stewart, no longer with us, how do you toe the line between a loving impression of these real people and not making fun or caricature?
Yeah. Well, in my career, from beginning to date, I've never ridiculed any of the characters. I've never, it's never been a derision for me. You know, when I'm doing some politicians, I kind of grill them lightly on both sides, but I never get mean or nasty, and I don't spout forth any political advice or complaints or whatever, because people aren't there to hear me be a politician. They just want to laugh and hear the impression. So I've always been respectful for all the characters that I've done, and in several cases, many cases over the years, the impressions that I do, sometimes the character that I'm doing is standing there watching me, so I just don't do any blue humor or any derisive remarks when I'm doing a character.
Tell me about an instance where you did somebody for somebody.
Well, it really kind of happened. It was just one of these all of a sudden things. I started doing Johnny Cash for Johnny Cash. Somebody introduced me to him. I'd met him several times before, but in this particular setting, he was getting ready to go on stage, he and June Carter, and the individual that was there with us knew Johnny Cash personally and said, hey, listen to this. So I started singing, I walked the line to Johnny Cash, and He really enjoyed that, you know. He said, "Man, you've got me down. Thank you." And we talked a little bit and had some fun. And at this particular time, I think this was 1997, there was talk about the movie Walk the Line with Joaquin Phoenix in it and Reese Witherspoon. And I found out later that Johnny Cash was talking to his family members, and they said, "Well, who are you going to get to do your voice, Uncle John?" They said, and Cash said, "Well, if they don't use my recordings, I want Johnny Counterfeit to do it. He's the best I've ever seen." Mm. And for me personally, that's really a highlight for me that Johnny Cash thought that much of my impression of him. So there have been a few others, but man, that was really the pinnacle for me right there.
Have you ever done somebody in front of somebody where it didn't go so well?
No, because again, I do it respectfully, and it's more of a tribute, if you will, whether I'm standing there in front of the character or just projecting the character. I'm an actor. I'm just acting a part, but I've always had positive reactions to that.
Why do you think that so many acts now on stage, comedy seems to be in particular the case with this, that it has gone blue, foul language, even on television, they'll just bleep the words?
Well, I don't want to sound like an old crab complaining about those people, but it concerns me. I don't think it's necessary. When I was a little boy, as an example, I watched every television variety show, musical show, comedy show that I could possibly take in. And again, we're talking about the mid to late 60s here when I was in school. And one of the programs that we always had on, I believe it was every Tuesday night, was Red Skelton and the Red Skelton Comedy Hour. And I remember distinctly Red Skelton talking about not doing any blue humor, they called it, or just using any foul language. And he really didn't believe that was necessary. And it was kind of a lesson for me that I took away from watching shows like his. And then later on, he was interviewed, and he repeated that. And I just never forgot that. And then I try to be respectful of my craft. And I believe that if you've got good material and you keep a positive image, you just don't have to do any of the foul language. But you're right, it's just terrible today. And I wonder if some of the comedians do this just for effect, because perhaps they're not funny enough. I don't know, that's kind of a personal observation of mine. I could be wrong in that. One of my favorite comedians was Joan Rivers, and I couldn't wait to see her show, and she was just fabulous. And I was really enjoying the show, and then, I don't know, a little ways into the show, she started using some bad language, I mean, just foul language, and she got a big reaction out of a portion of the crowd, and then she just laced her show for the rest of the time with that language. And I thought, my gosh, a woman of this tremendous talent played down to the audience like that. But I'm still a fan of hers. I don't mean to be too mean about it, but it was quite sobering to see somebody of her stature do that. So, you know, maybe it's a sign of the times. That's the kind of time I don't want to have, so I just steer clear of that.
What is interesting about you, what I find interesting, is a lot of people do the movie stars, a lot of people do politicians, certainly, but these country music legends, like Johnny Cash, like Ernest Tubb, those are interesting. Why were they appealing to you?
Well, again, there was something unique about them. You know, not just their voice, but a lot of the songs that they sang. See, in my show, there's a lot of young people that come to my shows that never heard of Ernest Tubb or Buck Owens or, God forbid, Johnny Cash. But I present it to where they'll also enjoy the music, and they'll also enjoy the comedy. If they don't know who the voice is by virtue of their young age, they're still going to get something out of the show as I said, because of the music and because of the presentation and the jokes. So, but really, when you're talking about Cash and Ernest Tubb, nobody would accuse them of being fabulous singers. I think they were great by virtue that they were such characters. You know, we just lost a tremendous songwriter and singing talent, Freddie Hart. He was quite prolific. And, you know, spending time around these people, I just absorbed their life experience as they're telling me some of the things that they went through, some of the people that they knew, and their sincerity. And I just kind of, by osmosis, I try to take it all in, and I try to be better on stage, using them as an example, and they're positive. And I know, some of your listeners out there are thinking, but wait a minute, what about so-and-so? Well, they had their negative side, as all of us do, but I try to take the good and present that on stage.
Is there anybody who you wanted to do that you have not been able to get their voice down?
Yes, I would love to, and I haven't figured it out yet, Burl Ives.
Mm.
He had such a unique voice, and I just haven't been able to figure that one out yet.
Mm. If somebody were to come to a Johnny Counterfeit show, what would they see?
Well, in my usual show, whether my band is with me or sometimes it's a small intimate crowd where it'll just be me and my guitar, I present 30 different characters. And it isn't just impressions, because I've been blending in songs that I've written and that I'll sing in my own voice, topical songs. The most recent one that I've added to the show that I wrote is entitled, I Just Met My Next Ex-Wife and She Has Three Last Names. And so, you know, the comedy and the parodies figure into my show along with the impressions, and the good clean comedy I might add again. A lot of topical things I'll include in my show. As an example, I'll take some older characters like Archie and Edith Bunker, and I'll have them sing with Johnny Cash, I Walk the Line, but they have their own new verse that applies to some of today's news items. I'll throw in Bill Clinton doing the same thing, but again, it's not derisive, it's just having fun. And some of the news of today, I'll adapt what I'm doing. But most of it is nostalgic, but I try to stay updated and blend in some of the today things. One great thing that I've added, something old that people get a kick out of today, is I've got a couple of commercials that I recreate on stage, the songs from the Oscar Mayer Wiener commercial. You know, oh, I wish I were an Oscar Mayer Wiener, and that and my baloney has a first name. And I promise you, every single audience knows those commercials, and they jump right in there, and we just all sing this together. And so there's a lot of that in my show. If people in the audience, they know if they've seen me before, or they feel comfortable because they're listening to other members of the audience sing along some of the songs, not just the commercials, but say Johnny Cash singing Folsom Prison Blues or I Walk the Line, they'll jump right in there and we just have a great time.
In your opinion, what makes a good advertisement?
Memory retentiveness, if you will. It was just several years ago, I recalled my sister-in-law talking about those Oscar Mayer commercials, and so I started watching them again on the internet, and I thought, you know, that is such a catchy, cute little thing from the 1960s. Let me give it a try and add it. And it, I don't know, perhaps it takes people back to their childhood, and maybe that's a little bit of the element of what I do when I'm doing the older voices. Sometimes I'll put Johnny Cash singing a song with Vince Gill just to blend the old with the new. And so I kind of take people back and forth for the last 50 years, and perhaps that's what it is. I remember that when I was a kid. And that could largely be the entertainment factor of my show.
You have also performed at the White House. How did that come about, and what was that experience like?
It was such an honor to perform at the White House. A friend of mine that had been booking me in shows around the country, he was a personal friend of President Clinton and Mrs. Clinton, and he wanted to present a show at the White House, and so he asked a bunch of us, and I was so honored to be included, to put on a show on the South Lawn of the White House. And the gentleman's name is Ed Gregory, and he used to have a bunch of rides and different displays for county and state fairs. And so he took some of his equipment up there to the White House grounds and put it up, and we had a stage, of course, and we did a concert for the President and First Lady and all their guests, and it was just quite a thrill for me to be there, because I'm a huge fan of American history. And so while I'm there, I'm thinking about all these presidents and all these other political heroes of mine that had been right here on these grounds. And so it was, it really, I have to count that along with doing an impression of Cash for Cash. I've got to count being at the White House is a true highlight of my career.
Did you get to interact with the president?
Yes, I did. In fact, I did an impression of Bill Clinton for President Clinton. He got the biggest kick out of it. I've got a photo of him just rearing back laughing at what I said. And so it benefited me greatly, because I kept it respectful. And when I started doing impressions, you know, Hillary was listening to that. And then I looked at her and started doing my impression of Reagan. And she liked that. And so I kind of, you know, I started doing Bill Clinton for both of them. And the next thing I know, well, I had Ronald Reagan doing something too. And so that turned out great. Thank you.
Sounds like a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
It was indeed. I hope it's not the last time. You know, again, I don't get political. I'd love to do something at the White House for President and Mrs. Trump and their guests. It was just another great honor for me to be able to do that. I'd love that.
Do you have a Donald Trump impression?
I'm working on it. I can tell you, believe me, it's still pretty new. One of my favorite things that I say surrounding the Trump administration, the Secret Service, ladies and gentlemen, the Secret Service is still a little bit nervous. They don't quite know how to interact with this new president, and the Secret Service agents know sooner or later, one of them, because they protect the president all the time, one of them is going to have to stand up and yell, "Donald Duck!"
That's good. That's good. When it comes to political figures, is that more difficult, even though it's not political humor, like with Nixon, for example? Do people still carry, I don't know, feelings from that era?
Yes, there are a lot of people that grew up during that time, but again, by virtue of how I present them, and I don't do anything derisive, it's more amusing than anything else. They get a big kick out of it. But everybody seems to remember the Nixon thing. So what I've done is I've written some parodies using, again, I Walk the Line, and I've updated some of the lyrics that Richard Nixon will sing. And so I try to fold it into today, hearkening back to the old Nixon, you know, let me make this perfectly clear. And he talks about the media in his day, and people still love it. I don't do President Johnson anymore, because he really didn't lend himself to as amusing a character as Richard Nixon. So a lot of these politicians are just great targets anyway, but I hold it back. I don't get political, but boy, oh boy, it would sure be easy to do that.
We see that every day, I think, without question.
Yeah.
There are a few people who are beloved people. Maybe you could do a little bit for our audience. What does Johnny Carson sound like?
Ah, it was so cold. It was so cold that Ed saw a congressman with his hands in his own pocket.
He's one of those indelible characters.
Yeah, I have a routine, sometimes depending on the age group of the audience. If there's some, if they're mostly older people, I have a Carnac routine that I do. The answer is an atheist and Bernie Sanders for president. And the question is, name two things that haven't got a prayer. That's about as mean as I get with politics. So it isn't really. It's just fun.
That's good time.
I even stick in Archie and Edith Bunker there.
Oh yeah, me and Archie sing a song.
That's tremendous. Now, is it hard to do women?
Only if they say no. The only female character that I do is Edith Bunker, so I'm safe there.
I also heard you do a very good Dean Martin.
Oh, I like to do Dean Martin in my show. Everybody loves somebody sometimes. The tremendous songs of people like him and Sinatra and Perry Como and like that. I sometimes I'll blend that in, again, depending on the age group of the audience. I'll even have Dean Martin sing I Walk the Line with Cash if it folds in with the show. In fact, I'm going to be doing a show at Bally's in Las Vegas on the 2nd, and I've got some things cooked up for the audience there, which will include some of the old, some of the new, but I'm going to have Dean Martin sing with Cash on that. Maybe throw in Sinatra, you know, the part of the Rat Pack plus Cash, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to that.
Can you give us a little Frank Sinatra?
Let's see. Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I'll have him do I Walk the Line, and then at the end of it, he'll say, doobie, doobie, doo. Imagine Sinatra singing I Walk the Line. Let me try and get the new lyrics that I've been I'll have to give me a few minutes. I've got to think up the lyrics that I've added to that, having Sinatra with Cash on that thing, if you can imagine that, of all things.
Well, one person we talked about earlier was Ernest Tubb. Tell the audience who he was, and then give us a little bit of him.
Well, Ernest Tubb was born in Texas, and of course, as we talked about, he was more of a stylist. He didn't have a tremendous singing voice in the traditional sense, but it was an interesting voice. He did a lot of the honky-tonk type country music. His career began, I believe, professionally in 1941. He had the song I Walk the Line, but Walking the Floor Over You, and he re-recorded it a number of times over the years. But he mentored a lot of young country artists and helped them get started. But he was just a real staple on the Grand Ole Opry, as an example. And I think when Walking the Floor Over You came out, it kind of launched his career into the national limelight. Of course, there was only radio in those days, but I got to work with some of his band members, and I met Ernest Tubb one time many years ago. But again, he was a stylist, and the songs that he sang were just solid country music. You know, I'm walking the floor over you. I can't sleep a wink. That is true. And he was just a character unto himself.
Hmm. Where have these characters gone? You alluded to it earlier. Today, maybe people are a little more cookie cutter. What do you think happened?
Well, I witnessed a lot of this happening. In fact, I'm writing about it in a book that I hope to have published next year, but it answers your question. And again, this was my observation, but I saw it happening in the early 80s when I first got started in my career. I also found myself doing guest shots on radio, and it started that some of the DJs that were on country radio, they came from the rock and roll era of the 60s and 70s, and they didn't necessarily like real country music, like the Buck Owens and the Webb Pierce and people like that. And so when artists like the Eagles were kind of prevalent back in the 70s, some of the disc jockeys at this point in time, they were still allowed to blend their own music, what they wanted played on the air. They started airing some of that, and then of course Alabama came along, and nothing against any of these people, they're tremendous artists, but to me they just weren't necessarily country. But having said that, the disc jockeys liked it, and so did what was called the baby boom generation back in those days. And let's face it, all of this is about making money, and so the baby boom generation that was less country music leaning and more rock and roll leaning, they started buying a lot of product that they were hearing, and the record companies saw that, and so they started blending in artists that weren't quite as country as some of the people that I mentioned. And the next thing you know, I think that they hijacked country radio, and I'm talking generally now, generally speaking, the large reporting stations that were big enough to have huge audiences, they started reporting that some of these non-traditional country artists were in demand, and then of course the record companies saw the sales go up, and that's the way that they were leaning toward it. And I've got no problem against that. And I think over the years, country radio, again, this is just my personal opinion, I think country radio has committed suicide in that they blended in this rock music. And again, nothing wrong with that. If that's what you like, great. There's a market for everything. But I objected to calling something country music when clearly it wasn't. But the radio station format was there, and they just blended it in, and now we have the change that we saw the last, 30 years. So I think it's all about sales. And again, no problem with that. But I didn't like them calling country music with that title when it clearly wasn't country music. So, but, you know, they're going to, if they're listening to me, they're going to say, well, who cares what you think? But I watched it happen because I was there at Ground Zero, and I heard the remarks by these DJs. Well, I don't like Johnny Cash, and I don't like blah, 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 blah. And then, of course, computers started taking over in the early 80s about that same time, and the big radio stations started programming what the disc jockeys were supposed to play. And in the early 80s, they were still allowed to blend in a few of what they wanted. But it all became kind of dictated, this is what you're going to play. And I know that's true, again, because I was there, and this particular radio station that I was guest appearing on regularly, they were playing the same Alabama song that had just come out 4 times an hour. Because that's what the record labels and the charts were showing that the customers were demanding. And so, you know, that's the way I saw it happen. I'm sure other markets were different, but as I started moving around the country with my career, I noticed the same thing happening as far as blending in non-traditional country. Now, to be sure, in those early days like that of the 80s, there were different labels. They said country rock, and then they said new country, and then they finally just dropped all of that and just decided, well, we're just going to call it all country music, and, you know, that's kind of the way it morphed, so to speak.
You know, it is very interesting because rock and roll, you will go into many markets and you will have a classic rock station that is still playing Elvis is still playing, Bobby Lewis is still playing that type of music, but you would be hard-pressed to find a format that is doing Johnny Cash and Buck Owens and Roy Clark exclusively.
Yeah. Yeah, with the exception now, as you and your listeners know, thanks to the internet, we can see and hear and read anything we want to at any time we want to do it. And so the people that manipulated, if you will, what people had to listen to on the radio, thanks to the internet / smartphones and everything like that, and we can hear your program as well on the internet whenever we want to, the machine, quote-unquote, pretty much is extinct now, because the decision-making is back where it should have remained, and that's with the consumer. But thanks to the internet, that's, you know, we have all of the above to listen to. So, you know, some of these different websites that I've landed on, there are particular Johnny Cash stations, and of course there's the Elvis station on the big satellite. I won't mention any names, but, you know, they have their Sinatra station, they have their Elvis station, and they have, I think, their Garth Brooks station. And so all of this is great. I think it's terrific because it gives everybody a choice of what they want to hear, whereas before the internet, we couldn't do that. We had to listen to what we were, when we turned on the dial on the radio, so to speak, well, this is what you're going to hear, and that's that. So,
you've spoken about Buck Owens. Give us a little Buck Owens.
They're going to put me in the movies. They're going to make a big star out of me. The high water mark of country music, I think, was mid to late 60s with Buck Owens and the Buckaroos. And, of course, I've got to throw Cash in there. But there was some tremendous real country music in the 60s. So I got to meet Buck Owens when I was just a little kid, and he was just bigger than life to me. So, you know, I've got to experience some of these people live on stage, which was just really great.
One of the interesting things when I was looking at some of your work on the internet, you alluded to Richard Nixon earlier, but the Walk the Line version about Richard Nixon and his tapes, where did that come from?
I just made it up years ago, and since that routine, I've updated it with Nixon, but again, as you pointed out, it harkens back to the Watergate tapes and things like that. And so it just, I like to write song parodies, and of course songs. I write country and contemporary Christian and gospel, etc. But the song parodies, I really enjoy doing that. I'm working on one right now. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to perform it. I've got Clinton singing with Willie and Waylon, Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys. And so when I write song parodies, I kind of listen to it, and I thought, maybe that's getting a little too on the edge there. But this, they just come to me. The Nixon thing just came to me, and I just started writing it down, and just there it is. And I try it on the audience, and the audience will let you know if they like it or not. So I use the audience to tell me what they like and what's good. So
do you just have a line from that for our audience to give them a taste of what it is?
Well, you are you talking about the Nixon
the
thing?
Nixon,
or,
yeah, the Nixon tape song,
or the Clinton thing, the new thing,
the Nixon thing.
Let me get this here. I keep a close watch on these tapes of mine. I keep my eyes right on them all the time. I clip the ends off for the splice that binds, because they're mine. I walk the line. But having said that now, you see where some of the younger people, they'll wonder, what's he talking about? The splice that binds.
It is. It's ever-changing.
Yeah, you and I know about splicing tape, but it's all digital now, and so I had to come up with you know, an updated version. So that I'm always looking out for that as well. I'm never satisfied with doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Is there anybody you've ever done on stage that the audience reacted badly to?
No, because, as I said, I've been doing this almost 38 years, and so I'm pretty well attuned to what is acceptable and what is distasteful, and I just won't do anything unless it's acceptable. So in that, I'm pretty much blessed.
Before we go, did you have the Dean Martin, or was it the Frank Sinatra?
Let me look it up here, if you'll forgive me, because it's so new. let me get it on this. I've got it here somewhere. I'm sorry to hang
up. Oh, no. You're listening to Johnny Counterfeit here on the Now program, WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, streaming live on the internet at WWGH1071.com. Also, listen on the free TuneIn app. Just search WWGH Radio. The app is free, and you can listen on any mobile device.
Thanks for that plug there. I've got it in my notebook here. Your listeners are out there saying, why the heck isn't he prepared? Lord, a lot of the stuff.
Live radio.
Ad-lib. How about that? Did I get out of that one?
That was good.
Here, I've got it right here. I've got it almost prepared here. Oh, he's talking about Dean Martin. I'm going through my papers here. I feel completely unprepared.
No, this is live radio. This is good. This is with people.
I'll tell you, I just put my hands on the new Nixon thing. Can I...
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I do that too? I walk the line? I just wrote this. Nixon is singing, there was a time I was known as Tricky Dick. The media beat me with everything but a stick. The tide has turned and we have Trump bold as brass. And now the media's getting kicked right in the rear end.
That works for me. Johnny, it's been a pleasure to have you on, and I hope you do come back. I think we need to laugh a little more in these interesting times.
I'm for that. I sure thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you. Johnny Counterfeit. Take care.
At www.wwg.